Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. With me today is my co-host, as always,
Chad Metz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. And this is your weekly reminder that The Undertaker is now retired. So, Chad, it's been a slightly crazy week in the world of movie news. One in which we've got a whole bunch of new release dates and confirmations of films as we near the start of production for the 2018 slate of movies. Got some trailer debuts and got some interesting confirmations. So let's start with Star Wars, because it's of course the big one, the franchise that everybody knows. Just as we're coming off this period where we're wondering whether or not the Jedi Order still exists and analyzing frame by frame a trailer that is 2 minutes long because we're addicts and we need our fix, because this is all we're getting until July. Lucasfilm, as part of the broader Disney slate announcement, said that Episode 9 will be released Memorial Day weekend of 2019. Your thoughts on both young Han Solo and Episode 9 going back to May?
Well, it looks like Star Wars is shifting back to the place where a lot of people argue it belongs all along. And that is back in May. I was surprised when they said the Han Solo movie was moving there. It was, you know, I was a little surprised. But Episode 9, I'm really surprised, because as we've talked about, when they're in December, everything else moves out the way and they just sit there and consume for like 6 weeks.
3 weeks between Infinity War Part 2 and Episode 9.
Yeah. And that's... that seems like not a lot of time, but for the summer, it kind of all works out. It's just that Star Wars has been sitting there and really like running shop until February, when it releases in December. So for them to go back to May, you would think that it's going to eat into their money. However, it is Star Wars, and it is the devourer of all. So,
but I mean, it was nice to have a National Star Wars Day every December.
I'm with you.
Because you're not going to get that in a scenario in which a scenario under which you have five more releases coming thereafter. Like, you have the Thanksgiving releases, and you have Star Wars, and the last few years, other studios have placated themselves in regards to Christmas. Mm-hmm. Because, like, the closest thing to competition is, you know, the Chipmunks movie, or its sisters. You know, and it's like, and there's not, generally, as a rule, the January release window is pretty dead. So you have that 6 weeks to run to yourself. And what this move's going to do is it's going to put more of an emphasis on that first weekend gross. Mm-hmm.
But that, I mean, the way it goes these days, most movies' money are made, almost half is made the first weekend. I think this will be good news for all the movies around Star Wars now, because when you go there, Star Wars is sold out.
Well, yeah, there can be, but Chad, there's this thing called Avatar that people continue to say will be a thing in 2020. So, you know, they're going to start taking that December release date after that. So this would have been your last chance. People would have cleared out for you. Spielberg moved a whole movie out of December to stay out of your way last year. I mean, people would have subsided and let you run in December. Like, your own studio is going to be fighting you for competition with the Marvel movies.
Because mm-hmm. There's going to be one on either side of Star Wars within like 3 weeks on either side. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they picked 9 to do it. I thought, you know,
the spinoffs kind of work, because I mean, they're not expected to make them, even though Rogue One did $1 billion, they're not expected to do $1 billion.
No. And so I always thought Han Solo was like the experiment. I'm like, let's see what it looks like and we'll move it back. But now it just seems like, okay, Avatar's coming in December, Cameron has probably made a call to Disney, like, can you please let me have my December date? I'm only doing it for 4 years. You can have it back after that. I'm like, fine, we'll just start it off a year early. There's probably some of that goes on, but still, I would have been like, you have it next year. This is my last time doing it. You can have it after.
Because they're not committed. Lucasfilm has nothing on the books past 2019. Past Episode 9.
I think that'll change.
That'll change it at Comic-Con or D23. We will get an announcement about a spinoff movie for 2020, which, if I'm a betting man right now, I would say would be the Boba Fett Bounty Hunters movie that Trank was going to do. Unless they go with... To me, the better bet is the Obi-Wan Kenobi movie.
Yes. I think Obi-Wan is...
Money in the bank.
Yes. Ewan McGregor is universally the thing that people love the most about the prequels. Like they're like, I'll burn all the rest of this, but you, I'm going to take you back out. So giving him his own movie, he wants to do his own movie. The fans want him to have a movie. It's a win-win all the way around.
And he's still young enough to get it done.
Yes. If it's going to happen, I don't know, because there's still those rumors that, you know, Obi-Wan is going to appear in Episode 8.
Force Ghost Jedi Council.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to harp on, you know, the inconsistencies of why the Force Ghosts are there, but whatever. If it were me, I still would have just kept Episode 9 in December, finished this trilogy off in December, and then be like, James Cameron, here, you can have December for your pretend movies, because we know they're not coming out. We'll just move right now. So once we get closer to that day and your movies aren't there, because they're not going to be there because they're made up, they're just in your head, old man, then we'll come back and take the date.
Zoe Saldana claims to have seen the script.
I believe all of these people when they say they told me we're going to start shooting in August, they gave me a script, I've seen the script, I think it's going to be good. I believe all of them. However, you fooled me like 4 times now. Just by nature, I cannot believe you until I see something. And at this point, I need to see a whole freaking movie. Trailer show up. I don't care. I'm not believing nothing until it's in the movies.
Well, not only have they fooled you, but they fooled the government of New Zealand over and over and over again. Play Charlie Brown the football.
Yeah, those little Kiwis got to be sitting there like...
We built these sets 8 times.
Yeah, really. Like, I'm not doing this again. It's going to stay here until you come. If you don't come by next year, amusement park. That's what this is.
So, I mean, I think it's an interesting experiment to put it back in May. It's going to be interesting for me because of what, you know, what is surrounding it. I mean, the culmination of the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe is 2 or 3 weeks beforehand. Mm-hmm. You've got other movies that are surrounding it, you know, already that have staked out their claim for May of 2019. Some of them will move. But, I mean, it'll just be interesting because they are in a position to be $1 billion every single time in December.
Yes. So, doing this, it'll be interesting to see if they get that $1 billion again. If Episode 9 doesn't hit $1 billion...
Well, there is that possibility of the marketing of it, right? So, in you'd always have the toys right around the movie in May, and then you could come back again in the fourth quarter and get those earnings with the toys again at Christmas. Well, this way you're not double dipping anymore. You're just putting them out right around Christmas time, selling as many as you can, and then moving on to the next film. So that might be also a motivation for them to move back to May, so that they can double dip on the toy money. But
yeah, maybe I don't know. When it comes to them, it's like it's like Star Wars prints money. So,
and it's a really weird thing, because 8 is December of 17. Han Solo is 5 months after that, 6 months after that. And then you don't get another movie again until a year later.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, whereas under the other schedule, it was going to be, you know, Episode 8 and 17, Han Solo May of 18, and then Christmas of 18 would be 9.
What's this shit? No, it's still 19.
Christmas of 19.
Yeah. So, it basically the schedule breaks up because Han Solo's there in the middle. And instead of being like, well,
instead of being May, December, May, December, it is now December, May, May.
Yeah. I think it cuts down a little bit. It will cut down a little time since. So it will be May of 18. This will be December of 19. So over about a year and a half. So you cut down on time that way. But I don't know. The only way this is not a success is if episode 9 doesn't make $1 billion.
Or if episode 9 brings back the Ewoks.
If it makes $1 billion, I don't think they'll care. I'll care. Because I don't want to see the teddy bears, but, you know, I'll live if it's good.
It's going to be interesting. We got the first, speaking of episode 8, we got the first costume looks for Rey and for Kylo that doesn't, Rey's looks more like a Jedi, more like Qui-Gon. Traditional outfit, traditional, and different hair color, different hairstyle. And Kylo looks more like Vader, black cape and all.
Okay.
And Rian Johnston clarified on Twitter that he had not written the treatment for 9, so that 9 is all Trevorrow, full stop.
Did JJ write the treatment for 8?
No.
So
they had their hands full just getting 7 out there. Yeah. Like, it's one of the reasons why there's not a lot of the particulars in 7. It's like, we'll set all this up and somebody else will take care of it later. Okay, Ryan, here's where we're leaving everybody. Now you pick it up and go.
Yeah, and you watch that movie and you realize it's a setup movie. The movie had to accomplish getting everybody back on board on Star Wars, outside of just being excited for a new Star Wars
movie. Return face to the faithful.
Yeah. And
bring a new generation in and start the ball rolling toward a new generation and a torch passing.
And the way they chose, and I think it's probably the best way, is to go with
nostalgia.
Story feels familiar and get most of the people on board. And then once you get them there, it's like, okay, do whatever you want. They're here now. As long as you don't bring in, Misa talking Gungans and emo Anakin kids and stuff, I think you're fine. So, they're there now. You gotta really mess this up to screw it all up, and I don't think they will. So, I think we'll get something different. But 7 had to do all these other things.
And there are reasons why Maz Kanata says things like, I'll tell you that story later.
Yeah, we need you. You need to hear this in another movie. Right. We can't give it all to you now.
Right. And I can almost guarantee JJ and the story group didn't plot every beat of those out.
Yeah.
It was just like, we'll get to that later. Like, Ryan, you can figure out what this means and go from there. But, like, we're just going to tee this up for you.
Yeah. And it's a big part of Star Wars is the whole, leaving these story threads for the next movie and then having this gap of time in which the fans start doing what fans do and speculating and
talking about. Yeah, Star Wars fans fanfic more than almost anyone.
Yeah, and I mean, it started with the first ones, because particularly between Empire and Return of the Jedi, because that one ends with Vader saying, I'm your father. At this point, Vader's the supreme bad guy. You don't know if you believe him or not. Is he telling the truth? Is he really Luke's father? And you had 3 years to just sit there and like, what is going on? And that's a big part of why Star Wars is what it is now, because people were like speculating all this stuff. So we're back at that point now. So Star Wars is always going to have these loose ends that you're going to speculate about. And that's part of the fun of it, and that's why people keep coming back.
I mean, it's interesting. I think one of the reasons people reacted so aggressively toward that information, which again was old information that had come from the original announcement that Ryan was coming on board to direct episode 8. I think one of the reasons people started kind of freaking out and panicking was because a lot of people in the cinema world don't like the Marvel model. The bullpen model of, James Gunn having a office right next door to Waititi and the two of them being able to collaborate on, whatever, and Waititi being able to run designs by James Gunn and seeing what James thinks about this, or the Russos asking James about how the Guardians would say this thing or that thing in Infinity War, the way that Marvel works is, they give their writers and their directors, okay, this is this is the broad outline of what we want from our in-house writer who's done this. Take this, work it, put your own spin on it, come back and pitch it back to us. And a lot of cinema nerds hate that because it creates this even, you know, tonally even cohesive universe that feels very much similar. Whether you're watching Thor, whether you're watching Iron Man, whether you're watching Cap, it all kind of feels the same. It's almost formulaic to a point. And so I think one of the reasons why I was like, oh my goodness, you know, JJ was giving notes to, Ryan was giving notes to JJ on Force Awakens, and now, you know, Johnson's giving notes to Trevorrow on 9, and Ryan saw an early version of Rogue One and was giving notes to Gareth, and Gareth was seeing early script versions of Episode 8 and giving notes to Ryan. And it's like, it's a collaborative medium. Like, it's not going to taint the creative process to have outside voices looking in and giving you counsel and advice. I mean, some of the best movies ever made got help from other people. The best example that I can point to is that Francis Ford Coppola showed an early version of The Godfather to George Lucas, and George Lucas made some creative critiques on the hospital scene with Michael and the guy who was there to visit, who he posed up as a bodyguard when McCluskey comes to kill Vito. It's looking at something, it's giving notes, it's helping filmmakers out. It's not going to mean that you're going to get, oh, he's imposing his will on Trevorrow and we're not going to get a true Trevorrow movie in Episode 9.
Going off of the Francis Ford Coppola with George Lucas, it went the other way with the first Star Wars. George talked to all of his friends.
All his USC buddies.
Yeah, while he's making Star Wars. So Francis Ford Coppola had notes on it. I think he knew Steven Spielberg at that point. All of them had something to say about Star Wars. And if you ever read anything talking about George's process back then, the story he started off with and the movie that we got are two completely different things. And a lot of that has to do with the people that he showed the script to, the movie to.
People who he listened to.
Yes, when he listened to people. And this goes to show you that you can be collaborative and listen to people, and it actually helps. So I know a lot of cinema nerds, they like to see these auteur-driven movies and having a singular vision. But almost none of those movies are completely singular. The director, one, has people that, I mean, he might pitch the movie to the studios and the studios like, go run with it. But you best believe when they watch it, they're like, okay, maybe do some of this different. Most of these directors are friends with their other director friend, have director friends, and they show it to them and they help them through the process. It is almost never a singular, completely singular vision from beginning to end. You want a singular vision completely beginning to end? The prequels. That's when George was listening to no one. And this is what you got. So, I know the Marvel process might rub some of them the wrong way. But the fun of Marvel and Star Wars is that it's a universe. And all these things play together. So, this is the process of having them play together. I think some of the Marvel directors have more room to do what they want, and some don't. But that's part of being in this universe, and it's what they know going in. So, if you don't like the process, that's fine. That doesn't mean that this is not a movie, because it's a collaborative process. All movies are collaborative processes.
But it goes back to the point. He said, no, I didn't write a treatment. Or if I did, that's old news. I didn't, it's changed since then. Yeah. Even if I gave notes, they've changed since then. And the interesting part about 9 to me is the guy who wrote and directed Safety Not Guaranteed is not the same guy you see doing Jurassic World.
Yes.
They're two completely different filmmakers, really. One looks like a big budget studio director just taking the notes that the studio is giving him and amplifying them to 100. And the other one is a fresh, innovative filmmaker who's bringing something unique to the time travel genre. And so when you get to this point where you're entering into 9 in this big franchise like Star Wars, you start to wonder, okay, are we going to get the safety not guaranteed guy? Or are we going to get the Jurassic World guy? Which version of Trevorrow are we going to get? And that's where it becomes interesting to me. Because if Johnson puts out something that is unique and different and feels like Rian Johnston, because say what you want to about J.J., J.J.'s tone and aesthetic and feel is very much Spielbergish.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much George, you know, George Lucas. It's of that ilk of kind of filmmaking. Johnston's filmmaking vision is completely different from that.
Yes.
And if it 8 feels like Johnston, I will feel more comfortable with the idea that maybe, just maybe, Trevorrow will be allowed to have free reign and make his version of a Star Wars movie and not.
Yeah, it's going to be...
Because Safety Not Guaranteed is a beautiful time travel movie. It's a really fun movie.
I certainly see that one. Because I've only seen Jurassic World and not that one. But I have seen Rian Johnston's Looper, and I know what that is. And, I mean, we're not going to get full on that for 8. But, again, if you can feel his style, because all directors have a style in it, then I think that's
a win.
Yeah.
So in this episode 9 release date was buried in amongst a news dump of other release dates from the House of Mouse. Now we're in a period of time where there's a lot on the books for 2018. There's not a whole lot on the books for 19 and 20. And these are movies that at this point, hopefully, would already have directors and writers in place. And so we're about to go into production at some point, either this year or early next year, and so we want to start staking out our claims on the grand box office calendar, which, or the release calendar, which, as we've noted, is becoming more and more crowded at more and more different places. So Disney went after Fox, and we'll get to the Fox release dates in a moment, but Disney's release dates, they finally dated, or they pushed Wreck-It Ralph 2, which got a title, didn't it?
It's really long. It's like
Ralph wrecks the internet.
Yeah, and then Ralph wrecks the internet. Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Yeah,
like the whole title.
And they pushed it back from the first week of March 2018 to November or Thanksgiving 2018. Smart move.
Yeah. I don't know what it's going up against so far, but Disney's kind of made a niche there, I think. You know, Moana came out that time last year.
Frozen.
Frozen came out around that time, a couple years before that. I think they've had, like, a Pixar movie in there in November as well. So, this is probably going to be the where they stake their Disney animated film from now on.
Yeah, and, I mean, Wreck-It Ralph definitely has a following. And again, a really good movie that, you know, for all the work they had to do to get the rights and such, really came through.
Yep, and because of that, we're going to get more new characters that they've gotten rights to, because people like, you know, Nintendo has been skittish ever since that Super Mario Brothers movie came out about having their characters in the movies. But they were pleasantly surprised with Ralph, so everybody involved has said Mario's going to be in this movie, so we have those kind of characters. And the added element of the internet, which... it just seems like a natural progression. So mm-hmm. I'm excited for Wreck-It Ralph. I like the first one a lot.
That leads directly to the other topic that I wanted to bring up, the next movie on here, Frozen. The Frozen sequel, which we've heard rumors and mumblings about since the first one made $1 billion.
Yeah. Freaking $1 billion, man. And that was in theaters for a long
November
time.
November to February or March.
I think it was closer to April. I know it was still in the theaters in Baton Rouge the Saturday before it came out on Blu-ray. Because I was like, oh, I'm going to take my daughter to go see Frozen, because she still hadn't seen it yet. And I looked up show times and they were still there. And I'm like, wait. And then I saw it was coming out on the next Tuesday. I'm like, geez, this thing has just been here forever.
Mm-hmm. Sing-along version, too.
Yeah. And along with that, so I don't hate... I like Frozen, but... for some reason, I don't know what grasp it has on little girls and these songs in this movie, particularly Let It Go. There was a point where Let It Go was cute. That has come and gone a long, long time ago. So, as long as Frozen doesn't have any more of those kind of songs in it, I'm A-okay with Frozen 2. My daughter be a little bit older. Maybe she doesn't want to sing the songs. That's it's gonna be fine. But there's another one like Let It Go. We got a problem, Disney. I can't do this again.
Indeed. You know, it's not as bad as It's a Small World, but it's pretty close.
I mean, it's a Small World is like 6 words. Let It Go is a whole freaking song, and every little girl knows it. And if they hear one note of that, they go nuts, and they all start singing. And again, it was cute there for a point, but that point is gone. We need to bury that point. Keep in mind, these children are like, they were like 4 when this first came out. They're like 8 now, and they still, if they hear a note, go nuts.
All right, so that'll be a huge monster hit. And Chris said note at Thanksgiving 2019. Mm-hmm. It's November 27, 2019. The Lion King live action, and I put live action in quotations because it'll be a completely CGI mocap movie, which the director of The Jungle Book, Jon Favreau, is doing, has been dated for July 2019. And we got some potential casting on Timon and Pumbaa this week.
Yeah, Billy Eichner, I think that's his name, and as Timon, and Seth Rogen as Pumbaa.
Which just makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, Timon is a meerkat, Pumbaa is the warthog, so I don't know the Billy guy. I've heard, everything I've heard makes it seem like he'll be okay. I mean, and Seth Rogen is just like, well, duh. The question is, I don't know how well he can sing. He does have to sing a little bit in this, because they sing Hakuna Matata, which is generally fine, because Pumbaa just kind of blends in, except he has this one part that he has to sing, and I know it, because I've been Pumbaa in a play that mm-hmm. sing this part. So I know there's this one particular part that Pumbaa's just all by himself. And they can play it off that if he can't sing, he's just going to have to sing this little part, and it sounds stupid, that's fine. But other than that, I'm good with the casting, and I'm good with the date.
And Rogan has had plenty of work with voiceover, with, you know, Sausage Party and other things. So
he was in Sausage Party, he was in Horton Hears a Who, and there's probably like 2 or 3 other things he's been in.
But that casting and that date sounds right, just about right. July of 2019.
Yeah, 2 years from now. I think they announced that they're starting to shoot next month.
Shoot.
I'm fascinated to see.
Shoot the people in the green pajamas.
Have you seen like the behind the scenes stuff for like Jungle Book? So, I've seen some of it. The one they like to show the most is of the bare necessity scene with Mowgli and Baloo on the river. So what it is, they're in this big pool with just blue sheets everywhere, and the little boy is sitting on this raft thing, and Jon Favreau was the one in the water singing the song with him that's doing all the splashing and stuff. So, but that's it. It's just them. And there have like other scenes where like he's jumping off a hill and it's like these like big steps with green drapes over him. And I think like a stick with a tennis ball so he can have a line of sight. And that's it. So I don't know what I want to see the behind the scenes for this stuff. Like, so y'all just gonna shoot this big green wall right here, right? And at this point, you don't need anything else but this one big green wall. I think it'll be more than that, but I want to see all this stuff.
It'll be interesting. It's definitely taking technology another step forward.
Yes.
So Chad, there was a movie once that had a lot of people excited. It was called Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. It had been many years since we had seen The Last Crusade. We were disappointed when we heard that Sean Connery would not come out of retirement to do a role in the movie. We later became glad that he did not attach his name to such a horrible atrocity that was Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, otherwise known as Indiana Jones versus the Aliens or Interdimensional Beings.
That's so stupid. It's really, really stupid.
So, in said movie, Shia LaBeouf swung from vines like he was Tarzan.
Yep, away from monkeys.
Away from monkeys. A jeep floated on the water in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. The Ark of the Covenant was still in storage at that point. Indiana Jones lost his job as a as a professor due to McCarthyism.
I forgot all about that.
And, yeah, he found his way, thankfully, into a refrigerator so that he could survive a nuclear blast at Area 51.
Not only survive, the blast goes off, and it's not like the refrigerator just sits there. No, the refrigerator gets blown, like, 5 miles and lands, and Indiana Jones just collapses out of it unharmed. When I just think the refrigerator would have blown up. And had it decided to launch him, it would have been, you know, Indiana Jello in the refrigerator instead of him just collapsing out. One, like, that was it. And that's early in the movie. When that happens, I'm like, oh no. This isn't gonna be good.
And then there's Cate Blanchett as a Russian, and there's interdimensional beings and a crystal skull that talks to them. And Aztec Temple and Marion and
they refer to the crystal skull up until the point you see it. And when you see it, it's very clear that it's like the skeleton of an alien. And once you, again, there are markers in this movie. I've only seen it once, but there are markers in this movie. It's like, okay, this is really bad. But maybe they can get there goes the monkeys and the vine swinging. Maybe we can get past this. I can gloss over the floating truck. Okay, that's fine. And then there's a crystal alien head. I know where this is going, and I want no part in it. And that was it.
Not to mention the fact that Shia LaBeouf is now the documented son of Indiana Jones.
Yeah. That is an easy, I don't know what happened, right kind of way for this Indiana Jones 5.
So, there is the Indiana Jones 5, and it has been pushed back 1 year from 19 to 20.
So, Harrison Ford is like 78 right now.
Mm-hmm. And Spielberg's very busy with like 800 different projects. He's squeezing in a movie about the Pentagon Papers and hammering it out because he wants it out by November.
Yeah, and he's literally squeezing that in because right now he's working on posts for Ready Player One. He's already shot that, but he's working on posts for that that comes out March of next year. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he'll be done with posts when he starts shooting this Pentagon Papers movie. And then I think there's another movie that he's doing before he gets to Indiana Jones, which is why I got bumped back. And now I'm not wishing anything bad on anybody, but at this point, if you want to see this Indiana Jones 5 movie as presented to us by Disney, you might want to get on your knees every night and pray to God that he doesn't take Harrison Ford between now and the time this movie's done shooting. Because Harrison Ford is going to be pushing 80 when this movie comes out. 80! He was already older in The Kingdom of Crystal Skulls than Sean Connery was in The Last Crusade. That's not really saying much because they're not that far apart in age. But still, just so you have some kind of
frame of reference.
Yeah. 80-year-old Indiana Jones, and they don't want to reboot this sucker, but they want to keep the franchise going. You tell me how that works, because my math says this is his last one. Win, lose, or draw.
And then, as I've stated on this podcast, you go back and you do the young Indiana Jones. George did it very well on television.
Yeah, and you should do it in this movie if you
want. And I've said over and over and over again that if River Phoenix had not died, they would have pursued a young Indiana Jones franchise with him after Last Crusade was over.
Yeah, and that would have been an interesting place to see where Indiana Jones is with River Phoenix being young Indy. But that would open the door for nobody would be upset of having another
Indiana Jones. And everything would have led directly to the point where you get to in Ark of the Covenant.
But now, I don't know. What they're going to, I would,
unless you have 80-year-old Indiana Jones sitting in a chair talking to his grandchildren, talking about stories from his youth.
I think Harrison likes the character too much to just be sitting in a rocking chair, so he's going to have to go out on an adventure. But that adventure can intertwine with the past adventure. So once he's done with this one, he's like, I'm too old for this kid. And he gets his hat to, like, I wanted to say grandkid, but that would mean I would actually be accepting Shia LaBeouf as his son. So I'm just going to say he gives his hat to some kid that he may or may not be related to keep that door open. And we just continue with the past adventures with this new Indiana Jones.
Something like that's going to have to happen because it's a real risk. I mean, you'd start shooting in 2018, late 18, early 19?
If you're lucky. What's this? They pushed it to
July 2020.
You would shoot 19 at the latest, but I mean, if I'm them, I'm like, I gotta shoot this tomorrow. Because Harrison
is going to continue to fly airplanes.
We can't forget that, because Harrison likes to do those dumb things. Wait, how old is he? Okay, he's 74. He'll be 75 this year. So, yeah, he'll be like 78, 79 when this movie comes out. Y'all have lost y'all flipping mind.
All right. So, let's move on. Disney was not the only big studio to stake out some dates for coming years. This week, Fox announced its coming slate. So let's start off with Shane Black's Predator, which we've all known has been a thing since last May. He was talking about it when he was on the press tour for The Nice Guys, which is a very underrated movie that no one saw. So they moved Predator back from February of 18 to August of 19. That's almost a full, over a year of being pushed. It's surrounded by a couple of different big properties. You gotta wonder where they are and what they're thinking with the Predator move. Which, by the way, Schwarzenegger passed on his rebooted role.
Yeah, because apparently it wasn't big enough, or he wasn't happy with it some sort of way. But they're shooting this right now. So, technically, they'll be done with this sometime at the end of the summer.
Mm-hmm. Special effects are pretty intense.
But that's 2 years. This kind of thing happens sometimes where you set a schedule and then the release date gets pushed back. Our favorite Punching Bag, Batman vs. Superman, was shot like 2 years before it was released. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be that kind of thing. It's just...
But it was an extremely long shoot. They started in November and they didn't wrap till like April.
They started in...
Or was it July and they didn't wrap to November?
They started in March. Wrapped in November. Yeah. It was really, really long. Having seen the movie, I don't understand why it took so long. But, you know, hey, that's where we're at.
Man of Steel the same way. Man of Steel was done in the right, you know, Man of Steel was done and then they pushed the release date to June.
Yeah, because it was, they pushed it because of The Hobbit. It was, right. I think the first Hobbit movie was coming out. So they moved it from December to July, much to my chagrin. I was really mad about that. But this, I don't understand why. The original date was February of 18. I get pushing it back from that because you're less than a year away. That's fine. If this were August of 18, it would make more sense to me. But August of 19, it's just... I don't understand why it's so far back.
It's a long way.
Unless it's tied into these X-Men movies that are coming out and they're pushing stuff back for those days, which we'll get to them in a second.
So, look at where you're placing it. I'm pretty sure there's not a whole lot around it in February of 18, but it's surrounded by probably Aladdin and Mission Impossible 6 and the, you know, Will Ferrell Sherlock Holmes movie.
Yeah, that August, it would have been a good time, like, you know, a few years ago. Guardians had its run during August. Turtles had their run during August. But this particular...
Suicide Squad.
Yeah, Suicide Squad had their run. But this particular August, I would want no part outside of the Will Ferrell movie. I want no part in none of those. Particularly Aladdin. Granted, that can go either way because of who's involved, but it's still Disney and it's still Aladdin, and people are one way or another going to go see it.
This is your reminder that I came from a movie theater where there was a large standee for King Arthur and there was only a movie poster for Wonder Woman.
Okay, wait. I just had to check it, and my bad, this would be a typo. It is August 18th.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Okay, so my bad. It's not August 19th. It's August 8th. It's August of 2018. So forget everything I just said. It's not so long of a pushback. This actually makes sense because of their shooting and all that stuff. Still, I want no part of Aladdin. None.
So, Chad, there was a irreverent comic book, R-rated comic book movie that debuted last February that swept the nation by storm. And it is now going to have a June release date where it's going to go up against Transformers, the Bumblebee movie, and the Ocean's 8 reboot, or the Ocean's 8 all-female version, and a week after the Young Han Solo movie. Your thoughts on Deadpool landing a early June release date instead of, you know, something like January where it could run for a while?
The only reason I'm okay with this is I would have rather seen it in February or January, but they haven't started shooting this thing yet. They're probably not going to start shooting until June.
The director change caused them some issues.
Yeah, so there's, I mean, they could probably get it done for February, but I mean, this is like pillar to post, like nonstop work all the way through.
Yeah, but you could put it in October. You put it in October, which is prime award season material and doesn't really have anything around it. September and October are just as dead as January and February used to be.
That is a good point.
And you could be something completely different from the Oscar fair.
To that, all I can say is that maybe Fox is like, well, this made blockbuster money before. Let's put it in a blockbuster spot. Which, like, everything is going against. Well, the Transformers and the Ocean's 8 movie. Going against those are not as big of a concern for me because, okay, quite frankly, I'm hoping Transformers starts to die after this next movie that comes out.
Rethink your heroes, Chad.
Yeah, and that they move this movie out of the way of Deadpool. Ocean's 8, you can probably argue that's counter-programming.
All female.
Yeah, so that's fine. The thing that concerns me about Deadpool is that it's coming directly after Han Solo.
1 week.
Yeah, if there were like 2-3 weeks buffer, I'd feel better about it. But coming directly after Han Solo, and if episode 8 is good, and then we see stuff from Han Solo, and people like it, no matter that it's a different Han Solo, they're going to go see it, and it has a chance of repeating as the box office champion 2 weekends in a row. So, even if Deadpool were to come in and win the second week, Han Solo's going to knock off some of his money. So, I think they put it there, but I still think that Deadpool has a possibility of moving. And I think it would be best for them to move at least a couple of weeks.
Be interesting to see where they go from here. So, Chad, there's a movie that's going to have a first-time director. His name's going to be Simon Kinberg. Your thoughts on the third X-Men movie to come out in 2018.
So I don't like speculation, so I'm not going to speculate that Simon Kinberg is the director of this movie. And yes, I know, we speculate on this thing all the time. I understand that. I understand exactly what I'm saying. I don't want to speculate on this, so therefore we don't speculate right now. Because it's still just...
Hey, at least they're being transparent about it this time. At least it's not a title like X-Men The Last Stand.
Oh, no, the title is fine. You finally want to do Dark Phoenix and get it out the way? Go ahead. Knock your socks off. However, having Simon Kinberg direct, I've said it several times on here, when he's doing Star Wars stuff, he seems to be great. X-Men stuff, he's working at about 30% percentage rate. If that's baseball, that's great. We're not in baseball, so... I'm hesitant about it, and it's his first movie. It's to reestablish this franchise, because that's what this movie's going to have to do. I don't think you go with a first-time director. Now, as far as the story itself with the Dark Phoenix, they've been trying to do this literally since this franchise started. Go ahead and try it again. Hopefully you get it right this time. People have enough goodwill about the new X-Men cast of Sophie Turner and I can't remember the guy that played Cyclops, but they like all of them.
Well, and not only that, you've already laid the groundwork with her phoenixing out against Apocalypse.
Yeah, so enough good stuff is there.
But you'd have to get McAvoy to come back.
Yeah, and I think he would.
He would, but then again, they all had that pact. If one comes back, they all come back.
Yeah, they said they had that pact, but while they're having that pact, Fassbender and McAvoy have to know that yeah, we're saying this, but there ain't no way in hell she's coming back. And Fassbender might be like, I mean, I know I said if she came back, wanted to come back, I might come back. He might have more legs to stand on. McAvoy doesn't have to come back, but I think he likes it. And most people like him as a character. So I think he'd be more inclined to break their peg and come back. It all just going to come down to Kimberg. And is he writing and directing? It's enough that it worries me that he's writing. But if he's writing and directing, I'm going to be really, really worried about this movie. But it won't hurt me like other movies because I've given up on X-Men a long time ago.
But you still got to hope that at some point we get to a point where this returns to, you know, actually good movies.
Yeah, and I want them to be good movies because if all of these movies are good, that means we keep getting more good comic book movies. And that's what I want. So I might not like the X-Men, but I want their movies to be good.
Okay, so we got a... Speaking of Matthew Vaughn, who was a director in the X-Men franchise and almost a director twice because he was on board X3 and then left X3.
Good for him.
So he did Kingsman, The Secret Service, and now he's doing Kingsman, The Golden Circle, which got its first trailer. Your thoughts on a full-length trailer that you didn't have to pause every 5 seconds to see?
You know, it's a good little setup trailer. I've only watched it once. I normally watch these a couple times. But the thing that sticks out the most is the very last scene of the trailer, which is it shows Colin Firth, his Harry Hart, sitting there, and he's shaving, and he has his glasses on, and one of the glasses is blacked out. So, and directly before that, you see Taron Egerton's and Mark Strong look at him like, my God, Harry, and they see him shaving, so... How did Harry come back? That is the question of this movie for me. I don't think we'll get it in any of the trailers, but they've, between the poster, top billing Colin Firth, and between this trailer ending with Colin Firth, plain as day seeing him. Not to mention that, you know, everybody that was on set had Instagram and was like, look, it's Colin Firth and he's back. So we know he's back. I just want to know how he's back. And we just have to wait for the movie for that.
I'm more excited about Channing Tatum. American cowboy spy.
Look, I hated Channing Tatum. I was trying to decide if I want to say hate. Yeah, I guess I did. I didn't care about Channing Tatum.
Gambit would have put a huge dent in that for you.
Yeah, that would have his goodwill I had for him. That would have took a hit. But you know, he was just a step it up guy, and he got into all these movies because he's like the charming buff dude that does stuff, and I didn't really care.
Him and Zac Efron shared that title.
Yeah, and both of them have turned it around. Well, for me. And then Channing Tatum did, I think he did 21 Jump Street first. And I watched it. I'm like, he's a buffoon and he knows he's doing buffoonish things. He knows it's all fits and it's working and it's great.
He's Gronkowski.
And the thing that put him over the top with me was the Seth Rogen movie, This Is the End. Channing Tatum's in that movie for all of about 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. But those 2 minutes are the most memorable 2 minutes of the whole movie. And as soon as I saw it, I'm like, that's the best thing he's ever done. And I hadn't had anything bad to say about Channing Tatum except for Gambit. So, in this movie, for him to be basically the American stereotype of a cowboy, like, a lot of people overseas just see us as these gun-loving cowboys who want to shoot some stuff up. And they made him the personification of a gun-loving cowboy, big brim hat and shotgun and all. I think he's going to do great in this role, and it's going to be so over the top and so fun, and I want to see more of it, and they only give us a little bit in the trailer, but I'm excited to see Channing Tatum just like you are. So, all in all, I'm just ready to see this movie, and the trailer did its job that way.
And it's a solid release date. It's September, isn't it?
I think so. Let me look. It's September or September or August. But either one, it will be fine. Kingsman, where are you at?
I mean, it's just going to be interesting for me because I think that they put themselves in a good position going forward. And they've endeared themselves to a lot of goodwill.
September 22nd.
Yeah. So.
That's a good date.
Yeah. It does. It's a good date. It's a solid date. It's not probably surrounded by much. And like I said, that's why the date makes sense for Deadpool, because you're in the heart of Academy territory. Yeah, so you need something that's kind of different.
Yeah, depending on what's coming out, it could stay number one until, you know, in the middle of October you get your run of horror movies. Mm-hmm. And maybe it comes out around then. So it could have a run where it's like 2 or 3 weeks at number one, as long as it's good. And I have no reason to think it won't be.
I mean, it's definitely going to be interesting, to say the least. According to my calculations here, it is the 8th of September. Ninjago is the 22nd.
Okay, so Ninjago is opening directly opposite Kingsman. And that's fine, because
it's a total movie. That's total counter programming.
Yeah.
All right. So, we talked on this podcast a couple of weeks ago about Fast and the Furious, and we did a whole podcast on The Fate of the Furious, which is a billion-dollar behemoth. And now it looks like we have decided, or the executives of Universal have decided, it is okay to split up Dwayne Johnson and Vin Diesel so that they don't have to be on the same set at the same time.
Well, apparently, before this news broke of this spinoff, the big news was that Vin Diesel and The Rock had squashed their beef and everything was good and la-di-da, la-di-da. But then right after
that, a lot of good that it did to squash the beef after, you know, erasing an entire post-credit scene.
Yeah. The Rock had to be the big man on that. Was like, look, man, I shot this scene and you just squashed it. And now you want to squash beef? Fine. I'm physically bigger than you. I will be the bigger man right now. And then as soon as they walk out, I was like, I want my spinoff. And I want it right now. And they acquiesce. So now The Rock and Jason Statham and Charlize Theron
and Cypher
will all be in a spinoff Fast and Furious movie. So by my calculations, they took, there are about 5 characters that I really, really liked in Fast and Furious, and they took 3 of them. So is Ludacris and Tyrese enough for me to go back to see Fast and the Furious? I've talked about Tyrese enough that I can say, no, I don't want to see Tyrese in Fast and Furious. I like Ludacris. But they should throw him into the spinoff too, so I can officially call Fast Furious done.
Well, the interesting thing to me is that if it would be the first time they've ever done that, 9's already got a release date, you know, April of 19.
And I think,
and what you're describing, what is being described here with Cypher and Shaw and Hobbs having their own spinoff movie, essentially continues the plot from where we left it in the Fate of the Furious.
Yeah.
So you're basically doing a continuation of the main story before you get to 9.
See, I don't.
And I don't see a way physically possible you could shoot and release a movie between where we sit right now in April of 2000 and, or May, April, almost May of 2017, for between now and April of 19.
I don't think the spinoff will happen before 9, because right around the time they said they were squashing the stuff, they said The Rock was going to be in 9. So I think what happens is we're going to have 9, and out of 9 we spin off The Rock and...
But they said that they designed this as a trilogy, in that Cypher is the big bad of the trilogy. So if Cypher is the big bad of the trilogy, you can't literally just have them jet set off and then come back in.
Yeah, you're right. And
so either you do it before, and Hobbs is back, refused his DEA badge, so he's still not an agent. So either you do it before 9, and the events of the spinoff lead to 9, which you'd have to start shooting that, like, tomorrow to get it out in time, and then do 9, or something happens in 9, you shoot off, and then you come back, which would be really awkward for 10, which is April of 2021.
Unless they just change it and, like, go with something completely different for 10. Because they're not going to shoot it between now and 19. Hell, The Rock is bit right now. The Rock is shooting Rampage.
And getting ready for Jungle Cruise, which he wants Patty Jenkins for.
Yes. So he would be shooting that probably towards the end of this year. In between that, he's got promotion for, I'm sure he's got another movie coming out. Oh, Jumanji's coming out. He's got to do promotion for that. Got to promotion for Ballers. This is why, in a visual medium, you can't do that. I just got shot the bird. Not for me, but for the idea of The Rock's Jumanji. I understand.
Video game.
Yeah.
You are going to have to explain to me how a physical board game became magically a video game.
Yeah, this week, Facebook does those memories. And this week, it was the memory of when they announced that Jumanji movie. And I forget your comment, but I laughed. Knowing where I'm at now and how you feel about it. But, so yeah, he's got all those movies that he's doing between now and probably like the middle of next year. And I know he's got other things right after that. I just can't think of what they are. So there's no possible way. Hell.
And Theron still has a Furiosa spinoff movie or a Mad Max movie. She went straight from this Fast and Furious movie to doing Atomic Blonde. Oh, yeah, she's a busy woman too.
Yeah.
I mean, the cheapest and easiest one to get a hold of is Statham.
And he still works enough, so yeah, it's not feasible for this to happen before 9, probably after 9, but they're gonna have to change some stuff up.
Yeah. And so that'll be interesting to see where they go for that. So speaking of Jurassic World, must go faster. Must go faster. Jeff Goldblum has decided to collect another easy paycheck and show up for Jurassic World 2.
I mean, why not? He
because he has not been seen since Lost World. And he was not even mentioned in Jurassic Park 3, which is essentially the story of Laura Dern's character and Sam Neill's character. Like, those are the two main ones from the previous movie that are in that movie. And it's basically, as much as I remember it, because it was directed by Joe Johnston and it feels like a movie you watch on an airplane. They crash land on, they were trying to get to the original island, which is Island A. They crash and they end up on Island B, which is Site B, which is where the Lost World took place on. And of course, because all the borders have been taken away and the animals have evolved and raptors can now communicate with their own language, and it basically becomes a survival story of, you know, this merry band of travelers trying to get off the island. Okay? Malcolm isn't in that movie. And when we leave him in Lost World, he's back with his daughter and Julianne Moore, and they've got the T-Rex off the boat. And John Hammond's still alive. And John Hammond's grandkids are in Lost World.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're in this place where Hammond's engine or whatever his name, the company was, got bought out by this Indian dude who can't fly a plane properly. And they built the park and got it fully operational. And then this crazy thing happened. And genetically enhanced dinosaur that they created because people were getting bored with the other dinosaurs got out. And then Mama T-Rex, who was like 25 years old, had to come out of retirement and defeat the genetic dinosaur. And, you know, Bryce Dallas Howard was running around the park in heels. And B.D. Wong was saying, I was the real mastermind behind the whole thing. Hammond took my science and ran with it. I got no credit. I made no money. And so I'm going to take my DNA, my DNA that I have created for these dinosaurs, and I'm going to take it away on a chopper so that I can create my own army force of, you know, commando raptors who will take over Afghanistan. And so B.D. Wong gets on a helicopter and flies away. So we know that he survives. He's a connective tissue to the original movies. He's the only connective tissue to the original movies that world has. So where and how does Ian Malcolm show up in Jurassic World, under what circumstances? Because again, it's the cell phone age. People took videos of a giant genetically enhanced T-Rex trying to eat people. So it's not like you can cover it up like you could in the late early 90s where no one knew what happened on that island. Or even when you have a giant dinosaur running up and down the streets of San Diego. Because people had no cell phone cameras. So there was aerial news footage, so you couldn't really cover it up, and it supposedly bankrupted the company finally. But where is Malcolm coming from, and what are you doing? Because as soon as the footage gets out of the genetically enhanced dinosaur killing people, your park shuts down.
Well, that's the thing with this movie anyway. What is this movie going to be about? Because it's not going to be the park. The park is done. The way they set up threads in the first one, it seems like there'll be something involving the military trying to weaponize the dinosaurs. But how do they make the story out of that? Now, to your point, how does Malcolm become involved in that? Because logically, through these movies, he would know that this happened, and he should not want to step foot anywhere near this place.
Not only that, but he would have protested and been one of the loudest voices against them building the park and making it fully operational in the first place.
Well, that...
All four of the original survivors would have, and Hammond's grandchildren would have all stood up and said, no, do not do this. This is not a good idea. Dinosaur eat man, woman inherit the earth. Like, let's not do this.
Well, that is a...
Life finds a way.
It's a simple retcon away. Just like, you know, he shows up and like, I was always against this part. I told y'all not to do this part. I went to the highest mountain and told y'all not to do this part. Y'all still did this part. And what happened? What we all knew was going to happen. And they can play it that way. Like, he's been saying this stuff in the background, but for the purposes of the first one, they don't even mention it, but he has been the vocal opponent to it. Because he would have to be, because they almost killed him twice. But outside of like...
And not only that, you've taken away the other option. Because the way they get around things in Last World was, okay, well, Hammond's plan was for the park to be affordable for everybody to get to. But he realized that some people weren't going to be able to get to Inisiblar. So he wanted to build a park on land and mainland in the United States. And so he had bought this property in San Diego, and they were going to build a football stadium, essentially, ironically enough, because, you know, the city of San Diego just lost a football team because they refused to build a stadium. But the option B was to build a park in the country, on the mainland. So you can't really use that again either.
No. And that's been my biggest thing with Jurassic World 2 is, what's the story and how we're going to get there? I have no idea.
And the disappointing part is the guy from Safety Not Guaranteed, who is the best part of Jurassic World, isn't coming back.
The guy in the control center?
The guy that wore the Jurassic Park t-shirt.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. But if they're going to be, you know, more dealing with the evolution of the dinosaurs, he wouldn't be there either. But just from a Jeff Goldblum stance as a person, like, good for him to go back on his greatest history.
Chad, you didn't sit through Independence Day Resurgence, sir. I sat through it. Me and three other people in the IMAX auditorium.
I was going to say, I hope this one turns out better than the last
one. That's 2 hours of my life I'm never getting back.
But he's got the middle thing, because he's done Resurgence, and now he's going to be in a good one, hopefully, which is going to be Thor, and everybody's going to love him, and he gets to be Goldblum and his Goldblumiest. And hopefully, and then we get him to come back to another character that we like, and hopefully that is good. And it's always good to see good things from him. Like, I don't know, he's randomly in LA with a food truck that he serves sausage out of, and it's just Jeff Goldblum just smiling his Jeff Goldblum smile with like sausage that he's holding out of the truck, and he's doing that between movies. And so I want everything to go right for him. I don't know why.
So let's move on from Jurassic World. So M. Night Shyamalan has a career again, because he made a movie that was a secret sequel or a secret prequel to another film that he had made that everybody liked before they all hated him. And so now he's beloved again, and now he has capital again, and so he's taking that capital and creating his own version of the Avengers by merging Split with Unbreakable and creating a Unbreakable 2, which is Unbreakable 2/Split 2, which will be called Glass.
Yes. Yeah, he took to Twitter, and he had a, it wasn't a rant, but he had a thread going. It's like, the people, the question I get asked the most is, when the bleep am I going to make an Unbreakable sequel? And now I can finally say that Unbreakable and Split are going to crash together, and they're going to make this movie called Glass.
And everybody's coming
back. Everybody's back.
Jackson's back. Bruce Willis back. Is back. McAvoy's back.
And so,
and the, think, and the girl and the chick from yeah, Split is yeah. is back too.
So we're going to get a sequel to a movie that most people liked at the time. I think that movie Unbreakable, honestly, is ahead of its time. I haven't watched it. I own it, but I haven't watched it in a long time. But I think if that movie would have come out even 5 years ago, or closer to the beginning of the Marvel movies, I think that movie would have been a whole lot better received. But here we are, what, 17 years later by the time it comes out, we'll have this sequel, and I'm fairly excited. It's probably my favorite M. Night movie. He seems to have gotten his groove
back. Which is weird, because I actually like Lady in the Water and no one else does.
I've never seen it. Okay, so I say this is my favorite M. Night movie. I've only seen two of them. That one and Sixth Sense. I haven't seen the rest.
Signs is good.
I trust you, and most people I've heard say Signs is good. I'm just never going to watch it. The next M. Night movie I watch will be this one. So it's really encouraging, since he seems to have gotten his groove back, and he's gotten everybody back, and we're getting this movie that I wanted, you know, 15 years ago, but I'm getting it now. So it'll be fun to see what he does. And I think he's still doing it through, I think he made, what's
Split? Blumhouse.
Blumhouse, yeah. So to see what the budget's going to be like, because Blumhouse, they make these movies, but they make them for the real cheap. So I don't know what they're going to do with this one. Maybe they'll up it, since it's M. Night's on a roll and it's Unbreakable.
All right. So Chad, there's a beloved cartoon of many people's childhood. It's called Masters of the Universe. It has lost its director, but it has gained a release date. Your thoughts on the McG leaving, and not leaving to go do MacGruber 2, but just leaving Masters of the Universe.
So I'm going to start with the date first. Well, it's kind of intertwined.
Christmas 2019.
The fact that they have a date, and conveniently, it's a date that has no Star Wars around it, is great, except for the fact that they don't have a director. So they decide to announce this date while also announcing they don't have a director. It will make me believe that they have somebody like ready to go, and everything is ready to go except announcing this director. I wonder who it is. I am happy that it's not McG. I don't have anything against McG. I just didn't think he would be good for this movie. He's done, I haven't seen all the movies he's done. I've seen the Charlie's Angels movies. I have not seen that Terminator movie. But I just don't, I didn't see him as a fit for Masters of the Universe, at least for what I want. But I don't know what Sony's trying to do with this movie. I would hope that they're trying to, this Masters of the Universe can be it's a fantasy and sci-fi movie like squashed together. And that's what it should be. I don't know if that's what Sony wants to do, but in the best version, that's what they should do.
Sony's about to have a bunch more capital to do more of what they want come July.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, after Spider-Man cashes this check, it's like, let's go nuts. But I hope they, whoever they're getting to do this, I hope that that person has the right mindset for this movie, and that Sony's in the right mindset to do this movie. And I have no idea what mindset they're in, because their last few big blockbusters haven't been all that great.
Hey, they're keeping their head above water with Lost Village. So, yeah. This is more than you can say for the previous Smurfs movies.
I think that movie suffers because of the previous Smurfs movies. If those two, like, live-action Smurfs movies don't exist, I think this movie, it's probably not good, but it still makes money. Now you've tainted the brand.
All right. So Chad, the internet has, and cinema nerds have collectively lost their mind as their demigod David Fincher has entered talks to direct World War Z 2, which they were all aghast at about 4 months ago when it started roaming around the internet that he was seriously considering doing this with his guy Brad Pitt, and every cinema nerd on the internet is now losing their mind because David Fincher might actually lower himself to direct a big-budget blockbuster.
So, when the news started leaking out months ago, I was like, I just never thought David Fincher would do this movie. It doesn't seem like...
Not after his adventure with Alien, where, you know, he had done it, and he had problems with the studio, and stifling creative vision.
It's not like it's below him. It's just that, he's done this. It didn't go well for him. And it just didn't seem like a type of movie that he would want to do with these, you know, hyper zombies that eat everything.
But at the same time, he has his boy, Pitt.
Yeah.
As the executive producer and, you know, on set every day. So if he has a battle with the studio, you know whose side Pitt's going to take.
Yeah, so...
He's going to go to bat for his boy, which will make things easier.
And this is... Fincher's in a different point in his career than when he did the Alien movie. So if he wants to do this movie, it's because he wants to do this movie. For the people that are like, this is below him. No, nothing's below him. He's a director. If he has a creative vision, no matter what the movie is, if he wants to make a movie about some pink dancing fairies and he has this vision for it, that's not below him. That's what he wants to do. He's a creator. That's
if you
what
can does. Get the financing, you can shoot make the movie that you want.
Exactly. And he did not have to do this movie. He's David Fincher. He does not have to do this movie unless he absolutely wants to and has something in mind for it. So if you think this is below him, that is something that's on you, not on him. He wants to make this movie, and that's kind of the bottom line of it. That's what a creator does. You don't have to agree with their vision, or you don't have to agree with the courses they're taking, but that's what it is.
I have deep fundamental issues with the idea that, this guy only has so many films in him, and he's going to waste one on this. No!
Why?
He has the opportunity to make a movie that he wants to make that will make him a lot of money and will endure him to the studio, which will give him enough goodwill and capital to go make whatever Fincher movie he wants to go make. I mean, the idea that the guy who directed The Social Network is too good to go do a zombie movie. Yeah. And it's like, you know, so Spielberg isn't allowed to go make Lincoln because he made Jaws? Like... You know, that doesn't compute. You know, it's... You know, we get so tied into these conversations where it feels like the deciding factor is, well, that's art and this isn't. Mm-hmm. This is commercialism. This is toys, merch selling. This is, you know, one for me, one for them. So he's just probably prostituting himself out there to do this so he can make his own... You know, it's like, no. He's friends with Pitt. They have a long working relationship going all the way back to Benjamin Button. He has a very particular aesthetic, which is kind of horror-esque in certain ways.
Yeah.
You know, he's a unique filmmaker with a unique voice, which will be... He will have an ally on set with Pitt there. And it's a sequel to a movie that had to literally have its entire third act rewritten anyway just to salvage enough to make $538 million worldwide. So it's not like he's coming into, you know, a Marvel movie where he's, like, constrained to what he can do. So at the end of the day, the studio's not going to tell him no. They're not going to hone in on him and impose their will and their vision on him. Pitt has the idea and the vision for where he wants to go with this because this is his franchise. He's the one who stayed with it through the course of the whole turbulence of the reshoots last time. Let him make his movie, and it'll make him money, it will make the studio money, it will engender him goodwill, and he'll have the opportunity to go make the movie that he wants to make. It's not lowering himself, it's not defaming himself, it's not prostituting himself, it's creating art.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that a World War Z movie has nothing to say and Social Network has so much to say, well, guess what? Yeah, he directed Social Network, but Social Network was written by Aaron Sorkin, who's one of the great writers of our time. You know, so he was working with somebody else's material. So it's not like he was a writer, director, auteur on that film either. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the idea of we get into these conversations of, well, the Marvel movies are crap because they're formulaic and they don't have a message. And what are the generations 50 years from now going to say when they look at these Marvel movies? They will laugh at us because we were so naive and Neanderthalish to enjoy these pieces of cinema. And I'm like, no. Like,
do we laugh at people that like Westerns?
Right. I don't understand where the haughtiness of cinema nerds comes from, because there shouldn't be these lines that get drawn, you know, of, well, anything that comes out between, you know, May and August is crap, and everything else is between September and December is amazingly magnificent, you know?
I love all these big blockbuster popcorn movies. I love superheroes, so I'm really drawn to that. But I love all those things. But, like, last year, my favorite two movies of last year were Moonlight and La La Land. I can like both. And you don't have to like both, but you don't have to look down on somebody or look down on the movies that you don't think are actual, like, art. They're just not for you. And that's fine. But don't look out on them and call them garbage or...
Well, and studios have different mindsets and different ideas. You know, they have different purposes. I just came back from seeing Free Fire, which is a Martin Scorsese-produced A24 movie that is literally just six or eight people in a warehouse shooting at each other for an hour and 15 minutes. That's literally all it is. It's one big, long, hour and 15-minute set piece of people shooting at one another. And it's produced by A24, and it made like $3 million last weekend. And it, you know, it'll be pulled from the few theaters that it's in now this week, and it'll go to DVD, but it's a good movie. But it's not something that's seen on a broad level by a lot of people. But that doesn't make it any less art than Guardians.
I think James Gunn has more autonomy of Guardians, but, like, that's his vision. That's what he wanted to do. Yes, he does have mandates from the studio. Most directors do, but...
And again, we've been down the road of, without those movies...
You don't get your movies.
Right.
So there is a symbiotic relationship here. You don't have to appreciate the other half of it. You don't have to like it. That's fine. But you don't look down on it because...
Don't belittle somebody because they're a Marvel fan or a DC fan or they enjoy going to those kinds of movies. Don't stick your nose up like, well, I'm better than you because I like The Master.
Yeah,
like, there's room for, under this big tent of what we call cinema, there's room for many different kinds of cinema.
Yeah, because, again, you belittle them and they stop going to those movies, you don't get your movies. So everybody loses.
So, Chad, you saddened my world last night. Posted on the Facebook the news that Kevin Hart has entered into talks for a new movie. Would you like to tell the folks what atrocity the Little Short Man now intends to do to the world?
So there's a movie from the 80s with John Candy and Dan Aykroyd called The Great Outdoors. I don't know how familiar most people are with this movie.
Do you know who it was written and directed by?
Yeah, John Hughes.
Mm-hmm. Who is a patron saint of 80s cinema, who directed such classics as 16 Candles and Breakfast Club and Pretty in Pink.
Okay, so if you say those three.
Does he want to go redo Breakfast Club next? Would he like to continue just peeing on the existence of the Hughes legacy?
I'm quite fond of Great Outdoors. It's one of those that my mom and my aunt would watch all the time.
Is he going to get into a fight with the raccoons that are talking while they are eating the trash? Or will they be left out of this version?
He didn't fight the raccoons. Raccoons would just show up and talk.
They were comedic relief, but I'm pretty sure that he will demand to have a scene with them because he needs to have a scene with everybody.
So, okay. Before you, I guess you're...
He's going to pee. This is almost as bad as that time the internet rumored that he was going to remake Coming to America.
Oh, that thing's still out there. Not with him. But then Eddie's saying that he wants to do it.
But Eddie's also saying he's been wanting to make another 48 Hours movie for like 4 years.
This is true.
And he no longer has the clout to do any of it because he peed it all away with Pluto Nash and Daddy Daycare.
That was terrible. That was terrible. But as far as the Great Outdoors goes, I'm always going to be on the side of, you know, if you want to remake it, that's fine. Now, my issue with this is, much like yours, it's Kevin Hart. Who I respect as a...
comedian.
As a comedian, as a business person, he's... Every story I've ever heard, he's really nice. He's really hardworking. He's always hustling. He's the kind of dude that you would want to be around. But I'm not a fan of his in movies because he has a certain shtick that he does. And I can see where that shtick would go in this movie. But I'm not sure if I want it. However, because I would assume that he would be the John Candy one in this. So...
Unless he's Roman.
I mean, he...
He could be Roman.
If he's Roman, and he plays Roman, like...
Like Aykroyd did, as the dick.
Yeah, but I want him to tone it down a little bit. Because Aykroyd was... He didn't go to 11, but he went to like 10 and a half in that one. If he tones it down a little bit, it'll be something different for Kevin Hart. Because it's like... He would be like... Yeah, he was a dick. But he was like... He's like a slimy used car salesman. And Kevin Hart hasn't been that. He's always been like loud and bombastic and easily irritable, which makes him, you know, we think would be the John Candy part. But if he can turn and do something different as Roman, I'd be more on board with this just because it would be different. As the John Candy part, I think he would just go, he would be too much.
I keep having the nightmarish image in my head of him trying to tell the bear story. And the bombastic over the topness that he would tell the bear story with.
Yeah. That's my whole thing. Is that he can be a little too much. And this role it was just a perfect opportunity for him to be too much.
And not to mention the fact that there's the whole side plot of the Sonic worker who's local and the son having this little fling.
Yeah.
Which is a movie, you could do a movie unto yourself with the idea of, you know, vacation, rich boy comes to town, falls in love with the tourist worker, the local who sees tourists come and go and who are dependent upon tourists for her livelihood and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But like, there's the steak, the steak eating. There's the guy who gets struck by lightning 100 times. There's the bear who gets his ass shot off. There's multiple times. He gets the top of his head and his ass. There's the creepy twins who are very creepy and don't say a word. There's Annette Bening talking about a washing machine. I mean...
Yeah, there was Annette Bening.
There's John Candy skiing on a water with no water skis.
Yeah. You make me want to go watch the
movie. I mean, it's... How does Hart do that? That's not his thing.
But that's what... We don't know how they're trying to set this movie up. Are they going straight? A straight adaptation? Like, all the beats, same kind of way? Or they're just... Basically,
if there are no talking raccoons, I will be furious.
I mean, they could just be like hijacking the name and put something else,
which would again and ignite fury and anger because this is Hughes's territory. And in my mind, Hughes's family would have to sign off for him to even do it.
So, at that point, I'm not mad at Kevin Hart. I'm mad at the people in charge. But most like right now, I'm not mad at Kevin Hart. They're offering him a job. He's gonna take the job. The people in charge are like, you know, it's a good idea getting Kevin Hart. Those are the people I have a problem with if they're trying to do it this way. So I'm willing to give them the leeway to see what they want to do.
And I'm not trying to be racist, but I'm more on board with Chris Pratt doing this movie. Pratt, with his sensibilities and his comedic timing and his chubbiness, could work really well in this.
Chubby Chris Pratt is never coming back. He's never coming back. Have you seen? No. he was chubby Chris Pratt, and people knew who he was, and like, oh, he's fun. I like him. He's Star-Lord Chris Pratt. He's getting a star in the Walk of Fame and stuff. Chubby Chris Pratt is done. Is dead. So if you can live with chiseled up Chris Pratt being the giant candy part, I can see why you would say that, because he can play those moments and he won't be over the top, and he can be reined. He doesn't have to be reined in. He knows how to play them. Mm-hmm. Whereas Kevin Hart, the people are probably just like, we want you so you can be this. And there's not going to be any reigning in because that's what they want.
You know what would be great? Batista is Roman.
I need to... Batista, up to this point, has proclaimed himself that he's not the best actor in the world. I've heard that he has a little bit more range in Guardians, too. So I want to see that first. But, I mean, we know he can play a dick. And he's pretty good at it, so... I'm not against it. And he can be a different kind of dick because he's a big, swole dude. And he can play off of that.
But I will keep tabs on this movie. And if it comes to pass, it will be another thing that I will rant on. And I will publicly here now plead and beg with the family of John Hughes to veto this movie so that it no longer exists. So that we never have to worry about this. Because if this happens, it will open up the entire library to being redone, and that would lead down some not so good paths.
So thinking about that, So I don't like The Breakfast Club. I almost actively hate it, and I don't care about 16 Candles and that. I don't really watch those. But so The Breakfast Club is not this sacred crown for me.
And all of his movies are sacred. You see Domino's is ripping off Ferris Bueller to sell pizzas now?
Oh, yeah. No, I love Ferris Bueller.
They're ripping off Ferris Bueller with the kid from Stranger Things to sell pizzas.
Cameron is in that commercial, too, mm-hmm. in the car. But I know the place that John Hughes movies has in people's hearts. But because I don't like The Breakfast Club, I know this is petty, but I want them to remake it. Just so y'all can all lose your minds. And I can sit here with my marshmallows just over the flames.
Just wait until they do Great Outdoors. If this actually comes to pass and we get an official announcement decreeing this, Twitter will melt.
I don't know they're going to melt over this one. Because this isn't...
Try redoing 16 Candles... With Selena Gomez in the place of Molly Ringwald.
Oh, yes, the internet will melt off of that one. I won't have a strong feeling either way. I've seen it, but I saw it when I was older, so I don't have an attachment to that one. Breakfast Club, I just don't like. The rest of them, I either really like or love. So I'll fight for those. Breakfast Club, I'm sorry. I just want to see y'all losing. Sue me. I'm petty that way.
All right, so Chad, we will see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 on Thursday night. We will return here to record our thoughts. Looking forward to it, ready for it, actively avoiding all spoilers, because I haven't.
This is rare for me. I'm avoiding everything. It is killing me that I can't go and download the goddamn album, because I want to listen to it, but I'm waiting to watch the movie and see all the songs in their proper context. And then as soon as I walk out, while we're walking to the cars, I will be downloading the damn album and listen to it on the way over here. I've avoided spoilers. There's apparently this Stan Lee thing that is involved in this movie, and I almost read that, and I'm like, nope, y'all are not getting me today. If I can last these next 4 days without seeing anything, it's going to be a miracle, but I'm really looking forward to this, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how it stacks up to the first.
And we don't get a new Spider-Man trailer with this, or shouldn't, because we just got a new one, so...
Yeah, I don't think we get another Spider-Man trailer, too.
But the Thor trailer will be attached to this, so it'll be nice to see that in an auditorium full of people and actually get reactions.
Yeah, we don't get any official Marvel trailers. If they're smart, there'll be another Wonder Woman trailer in front of it.
Because, there's only a poster that's out now.
This Wonder Woman marketing has been a thing on Twitter for the past week.
You know, justice begins with her.
Yeah. They've got that. And as of yesterday, they started, they're slowly starting their blitz because there's a whole bunch of TV spots that are starting to come out. So it's coming, and I would imagine we'll get a trailer because that's just a smart thing to do.
All right, so that'll about do it for this week's podcast. If you want to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
And at the Mets Theory.
Now we're going to do our Guardians of the Galaxy review podcast on Thursday, and hopefully the next time we have a regular episode, we'll have a special guest host to join us. That's something that we're working on, but we'll see if that comes to pass. For Chad, this is Brian. Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.